It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. Well, you know what? This is right at the end of March here when we're recording. This is actually going to play in April, but...
I'm about to drive to Colorado.
We just completed our second year of podcasting together, partner.
Hey, congratulations.
It's nice been fun. Done.
It's been 2 years.
Are we done?
I don't think so.
You want to do a few more?
Maybe.
Another year?
Yeah, we'll see.
6 months. We'll see. I said, gosh, we've been doing this for 2 full years now. Amazing.
That's a blast.
It's been a lot of fun, and we first started out doing about one every 2 or 3 weeks, but we've kind of hit a groove here.
Yeah. Kind of Someone was asking us if we would do it more than just weekly.
Yeah, I know.
That'd be a leap.
We keep waiting for that call from.
I'd have to quit my day job.
We keep waiting for that call from a radio station that says, "Hey, we want to put you guys on drive time," and then we'd do 3 hours a day.
That's where this began.
And then we'd make the big bucks, and then we wouldn't have to.
No, but you'd have to sell a whole bunch of soap, and we're not really looking to try to sell a whole bunch of soap.
Well, not they come after us. We're going to say you guys sell the soap. We're going to talk to people about the journey.
Okay.
So we'll see.
There you go.
I don't know that we'll get that, but it's kind of fun thinking about it.
I think the thing that makes me so excited is we really haven't done much of anything to try to be big promoters of this. And when I look at where this thing goes and the emails and the communications I get back from folk, I never cease to marvel of just going like, Lord, how'd they find out about this? And wow, how you're using this in other people's lives to just sort of bless them in their journey. And what that one lady said, you know, throwing freedom all over the place.
It was a guy.
That just was fun. That guy.
Fun. Yeah. And the people are coming away from this saying it's a good listen to. It's something, you know, a father-son does together. We got the couple in Canada who I'm going to be with up in Ontario and later in July. A couple that goes out and listens to it together. I just think it's fun that it's given people a resource to engage the journey, to have some encouragement, particularly if they don't have brothers and sisters near them who talk this kind of language of freedom and life and joy in the King. I think it's been a great tool. I'm blessed to be part of it. I'm blessed by the letters we get. I'm still nuts about some of the countries this plays in that we've never heard from.
And I know.
It's just weird to know what's going on there. And in some countries, I'm sure maybe they can't take the risk of writing and their email coming to this website or whatever.
Okay, I got
but
some
it's
friends
just
in,
interesting.
I got some friends in China that said we're being blocked in China right now.
Oh, well.
No, yeah, so figure that out. Whoever's the techie people, get past the Great Wall of China.
Well, they used to be doing a lot of that China listeners. I had to check and see if we're still getting some listeners in China. They may have found us out and blocked it down. But, wow, it's just tough when you start doing that as a country.
We'll find our way back.
Yeah.
We're back.
God has his ways.
Yeah, we're recording this early again because I'm off to San Diego. I'm off to South Dakota.
That's different than San Diego.
But by the time I keep seeing SD in my head because that's how I put it on my calendar. So I think I'm going to San Diego. But actually, I get on a plane tomorrow. So I'll already be back from San Diego by the San Diego. I'll be back from South Dakota.
I'm going
Dakota.
To San Diego because my kid's got a baseball tournament down there.
You're going to San
so
Diego.
So I'll try to see you down there.
I was just down somewhat that way. I got to take my granddaughter and my daughter and my wife to Disneyland.
Oh! Did you see any princesses? You had to see princesses.
We saw princesses.
Did you get pictures taken with princesses?
No, not me. We tried to line up to get taken with Goofy, but that was going to take too long, so we said, forget it. Now, Amy got to see Cinderella. That's
Woo!
What Amy wanted to see. But Sarah and Julie, now they want to get season passes. I mean, I just like, whoa, this is the most fun we've ever had. Disneyland, it's the happiest place on earth.
It didn't work for you as much as it.
I have been there so often. The only ride that gets me there now is Space Mountain. I mean, I didn't like all the music. Now, they got the Red Hot Chili Peppers, which I can't
That's the name of our basketball team. Woo! We're in the finals.
Would you just leave it by the side of the road?
Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I
hey, boys.
Know.
Go.
But that's the only ride for me that's just a real thrill. But I rode Dumbo with Amy. That
very,
was
very
fun.
Nice.
Rode teacups with Amy.
You know it's a blast.
I love that. When I'm with Amy, I can do anything.
It's seeing the joy and the wonder in little kids' faces. I'll be honest.
Only thing that destroys
I hate them. Amusement parks, not because they're not fun. It's just I get tired of all the crowds of people all over the place.
Oh, this was horrible, too, on a Monday.
Yeah.
Packed.
But I'll never get tired of looking and watching my kids with their face of sort of discover and wonder. And just, yeah. There's just something wonderful about that.
The only thing that ruins that is it's a small world.
Why is it ruining it?
That is the longest ride in this godforsaken planet, and it is boring.
Oh, no, not I've got little kids that are going.
Even with Amy. We saw her, went through it one time, but I'm telling you, that ride is so long. Where's that going? Is this thing ever end?
Just stick your hand in the water and play with the water a little bit.
We got off the ride. Sarah and Amy got back on the ride while Julie, Tyler, and I went to the Matterhorn because we're roller coaster people. Sarah's not. And Amy probably would be because there wasn't anything we did with Amy that she wasn't going, Mar, Mar, Mar. But we went over, had to wait in this long line, got through onto the Matterhorn, rode the ride, which is about a...
Speed pass, baby. Got to get the speed pass.
Which is a 12-second ride.
Got to get a speed pass.
12-second ride. Got off the ride. Got back to the... Called Sarah on the cell phone saying, where are you? She's going, we're still in the... It's a small world. Did you go again? No, we're still the first time. What? We waited in this long line.
To little kids, that is an awesome place because all you see is little kids all over the place.
I know, and they're singing it's a small world.
It's a small world after all.
Yeah, I couldn't take it anymore.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed Disneyland.
Yep, and now you're going to go to Colorado.
Yep, we're going to go hang with my dad at Telluride.
And then I'm going to get back.
Up at 10,000 feet. Ooh, the air is crunchy and not as much.
Yep. Oh, after I get back from South Dakota, I'm going to stay home for a couple of weeks. Sarah's got spring break. We're going to have some fun. It's Holy Week because the Masters Golf Tournament is on.
Oh, Holy Week.
The Masters Golf Tournament. That's my folks in Ireland will appreciate that.
Hey, I can't resist this. And then the Shaq's coming out.
The Shaq goes to the printer tomorrow.
Yeah, baby!
Oh, man. Very excited. Hopefully around May 1, we will put it in folks' hands. And
I got to tell you, everyone's got to buy massive copies and hand them out because I have been so just rereading it the last couple of days. It is a masterpiece.
And then you got to get this. We got facts from Eugene Peterson, who translated the message, written a number of other books, one of the wonderful spokespeople for the life of Jesus. He gave us a blurb for the book. It says this: when the imagination of a writer and the passion of a theologian cross-fertilize, the result is a novel on the order of the Shaq. This book has the potential to do for our generation what John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress did for his. It's that good.
That's awesome, man.
Thank you, Eugene. I'm pretty sure he doesn't listen to this podcast, but man, I tell you what, he and his wife read it out loud to each other, totally taken by the book. His book, he said he really didn't have time to review and didn't want to mess with it. And I said, just read 15 pages. If you can put it down after that, no problem. Well, he couldn't put it down after that, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah, he and his wife, he said, read it out loud together.
So we can't wait to actually put this on a show and talk about the book when enough of you have it in your hands.
Yeah, we've been hinting for a long time. Now it's becoming a reality.
We have probably tortured this audience more than any other, but we're very excited about it.
Here it comes.
We're doing a strange way of making it available since we didn't go with a normal publisher. We're really trusting Jesus to be our distributor on this thing, and we'll see if he does it.
Be cool.
Yeah. If not, I'm going to enjoy sharing it with my family. It's a wonderful book. All 10,000 copies.
That's just the start, baby.
Hey, I've got some serious stuff this trip. Got some email. A couple of ladies have written me, and I really asked, number one, if we would just do this on a podcast. So, and I'm totally surprising Brad. Brad has no idea. I've not showed this email to him, but...
That's all right. I'm used to you.
Good. Said, this people have been listening to Brad and I since late 2005. Come across the book So You Don't Want to Church Anymore and began reading it online. And I'm excited you have an audio version of it. Anyway, that brought me to your website and the God Journey. And she talks about their own journey through house churches, through some other things. And then she says, said, I'm a good writer, so I'm going to get straight to the point. Here is my brick wall in my journey with Jesus. And I was wondering if you guys might talk about this subject sometime. I have three beautiful children, two boys, 11 and 9, and a daughter, 8. In 1999, we found out my boys have a muscular disease that will take their lives in their late teens to early 20s.
Ooh.
So I was curious about your thoughts on how to walk this journey with Jesus and the topic of death or facing death. I've struggled with this. Obviously, since we found out and have had many conversations with Jesus about it, some I feel were one-way conversations, but still it's a roadblock for me. I know my relationship with Jesus is growing, but this trial in our life is, I don't know what to call it. I have been all over the block with prayer groups of us, laying hands on them, healing meetings, trying to get some meaning from our or identifying with reading Job on and off, trusting God that he knows the situation, reminding myself that we're only given one day at a time and we don't know what'll happen tomorrow, whatever. I could grasp that now. I don't feel singled out. I've gone through the pity party and the spastic emotional ups and downs. I know, unfortunately, this and other tragic situations happen to many families all over the world, and how some are facing it without knowing God and his love for them is beyond me. I guess I'm still looking for an answer that will satisfy me, maybe some fresh insight. I just thought this might be a topic you guys could bounce around. Thanks for being out there, and as you put it so well, allowing Jesus to work in your life and through your life to experience him and to encourage and remind others that they can have it too.
Wow. That's heavy.
That's very heavy.
I don't want to be light or flippant at all in regards to just the daily pain and trauma. I think unless you've actually had to face that yourself, theory doesn't cut it.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to throw theory around.
You know, my father's a cancer surgeon. And I have grown up with my fair share of death and dying and people that are close to us, because my dad wasn't one of these little clinical, just distant doctors. Some of the folks that he was treated, they spent time in our home. And, you know, they're people we know and love. They're dear friends. And, when I was in high school, my absolute best friend died of Hodgkin's, and I was there day in, day out. And the day that he actually died was a day I just kind of went, you know, this is so hard. I just need a day off. I need to not be here. And that was the day that busted me for a while. He's just going, like, the one day I didn't hang out with him is the day he died. That threw me for a trip for a while in terms of just dealing with it. And it's like, where is God and all that?
Let me just say this, because one of my formative things in growing up, at 16, 17, my best friend in high school got a brain tumor. And we were all just coming alive at that time to the charismatic renewal and believed that God was powerful and there were gifts of healing and things that would happen. And man, we did a lot of this, praying, going over after school, groups of kids, taking all kinds of healing meetings, adult things, some of the famous healing evangelists that were in vogue at the time. All looking, believing God was going to do something great, and even, you know, having quote-unquote words of prophecy that the sickness is not unto death, and God's going to raise him up, and it's going to be a great revival in our little town, little farming community in California. Despite all the prayers, nothing ever changed for the better. The slow progression of this tumor taking over his brain, him losing faculties, and then my senior year of high school, he passed away. And So we both had experiences like this. I think when you put your kids there.
Oh, it's a whole different order.
I remember, and this is so trivial when you talk about this, but when we first brought our first daughter, Julie, home from the hospital, she had a severe case of jaundice. And we had to drive her back every day to the hospital to get this blood test and poke her feet to get this thing out. This is in the whole history of what can happen to children. This is so stinking minor, uh-huh. I can tell you. But I can tell you how angry I was at God through this whole thing. Why couldn't I just bring my little girl home and be happy with her? Why do I have to take her every day and have someone hurt her? And, you know, so when I multiply that out by here, I've got 11 9-year-old boys.
That's the exact age of my kids.
Yeah. The prognosis is they're not going to make it into their 20s very deeply. But I think it invites the question, what do we say about healing and hope and prayer, and how does the journey with Jesus go forward when it's like a death sentence hangs over the head? I know when we lose pets around here, when we've got a pet going downhill, we don't now, but when we have had or know their days are numbered, there's a pall that settles over the dog, for Pete's sake. These are children.
I think as I've walked the little journey of life that I have, I think the thing that I embrace and enjoy so much is that, you know what? He's not just the God of the daytime. He's not just the God of the mountaintops. He's not just the God of the good times. He's God through and through. He's there in the dark. He's there when it hurts. He's there in the midst of pain. And, you know, the verses death, you know, where is your sting? Well, look, it hurts. It's loss to anyone to pretend that it's different. Oh, you know, just, oh, relax. You know, they'll be in Jesus' arms. They're in heaven. It's pain. It's loss. And to have to live daily with the dynamic of that day is coming sooner than you would desire. And do I believe that God heals? Yeah. Have I experienced the frustration of the fact that God can heal seemingly minor problems for some who don't even seem to, quote, appreciate it or live a life that reflects his glory and honor? And then other people that you think are so deserving, they seemingly go through nothing but excruciating pain and hardship. And is it real? You know what? I've seen enough to know it's real. Do I understand why the gift is given to some and not to others? No. Do I have a problem with that? At times. At times I really do, just because I don't understand. But I think I've come to accept a little bit of the dynamic of, you know what? This life experience, the good, the bad, and the ugly, is that journey. And the thing I've gotten comfort out of is I get to walk it with him. The good times, the bad times, and the ugly. And I've experienced some of my most profound times of intimacy with God, almost invariably ushered because of times of suffering, times of real pain and hardship, whether it's emotional, circumstantial, or whatever. That's when what gives me comfort is that's when God isn't absent. I mean, I remember bringing up, I brought this up at one time, but I was in the dentist chair one time, and they'd shot me 5 different times full of Novocaine, and I still felt all the pain. And I'm going like, what's up with this? The dentist is looking at me like, you're absolutely nuts. Your mouth must be the size of an... Yeah, it's like, give me a break. This guy's frightened. And as I came out of the whole experience, and it was painful. I did. I had a conversation with God. I said, God, where were you in all of that? He said, Brad, I was with you the whole time. And I could sense his presence, but there wasn't an absence of pain. He said, Brad, you need to realize that the presence of pain is not a declaration of my absence. I'm here. That so altered my understanding of planet Earth, my existence, and where is God in all this? That is one of the precious moments of my life to be able to go like, gosh, guess what? Pain and difficulty doesn't say God's absent. He's still here. And you do got verses. It doesn't make it to most refrigerators, but it says, in this life, you will have trouble. And to do an accurate rendition of what that word trouble means, in English it's trouble. In Greek it's bone-crushing opposition. And it's like, you know what? I love the fact that that's the reality of this world. That's real.
You love the fact?
I love the fact that the Bible's honest with that, because yep, that is my experience. I don't have to look at my experience and go, oh, I'm experiencing something the Bible doesn't talk about, or I must be in sin because of this. Because if I was living right, I would just have roses and wonderful things and great easy walk. It's, no, that isn't the Bible. That isn't the record of Scripture at all.
That is the expectation many people have.
It is.
If I'm going to walk with God and follow him, then he's going to fix everything so that, you know.
It'll be nice.
If children are going to die in their late teens and early 20s, we'll make sure the wicked children do that, not children of the righteous kind of thing. And that's the expectation people have. And it is disillusioning to find out that's not God's view of things.
And it is such a stumbling block, that expectation that if I live right, it will always go right.
I like what Elizabeth Edwards said the other day to her kids. She's the wife of a presidential candidate here in the States, and just learned that she's got recurrent breast cancer. And one of the things she said to her kids is, you know, we're all going to die. I just know now how I'm going to die. And I thought, that's a pretty healthy way to look at it.
Yeah.
Scripture says there's a real wisdom in counting our days and realizing that we're just all of us like a vapor of smoke or dew on the grass that burns out by the day, that when we look at our life, and I worked through some of this. My brother died at 49, fought multiple sclerosis for a long season in his life. Again, lots of prayers. I've seen God heal multiple sclerosis. So, again, why God does with some and doesn't with others, I just, it's beyond me to make sense of it. which is why I'm glad I've just been asked to follow him. I really don't have to make
sense. You don't
sense
have to have that answer.
I don't.
Do you?
But one of the answers for me, as I look at what Scripture says about this, is we have the tendency in our limited view of things to think this life is everything. This life is all there is. And we know there's heaven somewhere and there's an eternity, but we really don't live in light of it.
No.
And I really think what Scripture keeps trying to say to us is all of your life here, even if you get like 80 or 90 or 100 of those years in this life.
But a vapor.
It's just it's like everything that happened to you before 2 years of age, which most of us now don't even remember. I mean, just it's hazy way back. We're 2 or 3 years of age. We don't remember all that. But I really think in the way God looks at our life, he looks beyond this vapor time here. And he looks to what it will mean in eternity. And I got a letter from a couple this week in Ireland, whose home I've been in. They've had a very difficult time getting pregnant the first time, and they finally had a child. We were there, prayed for them, and they got pregnant just very shortly after that and had their first child. Well, they just miscarried a second one. And their reality is now we have 4 children waiting for us in eternity, which that doesn't minimize the pain. That's not a little slappy answer to make you feel better, but it is a reality. It is a reality that we don't know. All of us are going to die at some point. We don't know if it's tomorrow in an auto accident or, you know, something growing in us we don't even know is there. Or we don't know, and there's no guarantees on that.
Well, and I think, you know what, if we treated each day that we were alive as a precious gift, I think the thing that bums me out is that is thrown out oftentimes as a cliche. And yet it is a powerful life-transforming reality that if I was to account the number of my days and each one was a precious gift and soberly I assessed as to what should I do, I don't think I'd be a morose, serious person. But you sit there and like, you know, recognize the gift that this is. I think so oftentimes we just we go through life worrying about things of the past, afraid of things of the future, and not living it to the full in fellowship with God, appreciating what it is that we have.
Which is what Matthew 6 exactly talks about. Don't live in your imagined future. Don't live in the anxiety of what may or may not become. And even if you have some degree of certainty as to what it might be, instead there's enough for today to live in him, embrace him, and enjoy him. The last dog we got, dogs are pretty important around the Jacobson household, especially Sarah. And the last dog we got, we took her to the vet as a little pup. The vet just looked at Sarah, just, oh, no. And Sarah said, what? This dog has severe dysplasia. This is a 3-month-old pup. What? I said, yeah, this dog might, without hip replacement surgery, which is, you know, $5,000 a hip or some crazy thing, which we're not going to do. This is a dog after all. But Sarah, I was out of town actually when she called me, and she was in tears as she was sharing this little puppy is damaged and may not have a full life, may have a very painful life. And I said, honey, how are you doing with that? And she said this, and I think this is really, she said, you know what? I don't know how long I'm going to get this dog, but I'm going to make every day of this dog's life as happy as it can be. I'm going to enjoy every day I get with this dog. And I just think that's an attitude we've had with her. We've had her now almost 4 years, and, you know, she's got some things that are, she doesn't seem to be in a whole lot of pain, so we're still loving up on her. But that's been our, and that's a dog, different with our kids or our wives or whatever, but I think the same thing's true. Every day, let's make this the best day. We don't know how many days we have. So every day to its fullest. If I was this lady, there isn't a time I would pray where I wouldn't put my kids before Jesus and say, I'd love for you to heal them. I
wouldn't ever stop asking.
I wouldn't either. I wouldn't stop when other people come through my home. I wouldn't have the desperation to run down to every prayer thing going on and try 15 different healing tactics.
No, I think a lot of times it's done out of anxiety.
It is, because I don't think we want people like this falling into this trap. I got this from a lady, too, this week. Same thing. And I thought, gosh, interesting juxtaposition of these things. She says, this past July, I lost my sweet, gentle husband to the ravages of Alzheimer's. We were married 24 wonderful years, and we were relatively new Christians when we were married. So at the beginning of my Christian walk, I unfortunately listened to a lot of legalistic teachings, especially the health and prosperity gospel, which was popular back in the 80s. The main teaching I picked up was that if you or someone you were praying for were not healed, it was because of a lack of faith or sin, which had to be in my life. I knew I was not strong spiritually and did not always put God first in my life. I was always very fearful of my secular interest. I tried to listen to Christian music, but didn't like it as much as I had some secular artists such as Sarah Brightman or Michael Crawford or Andrew Bocelli, Celtic Women, and some 70s light rock and roll music. I also started to become fearful of going to the movies and reading non-Christian books. My main fear, however, was that my love of fashion, my rather large collection of fashion magazines like Vogue and Harper's Bazaar, some of the teachings I heard said that these things would bring down curses if one has them in their home. I wanted to get rid of them, but found it difficult. I started thinking that maybe only if I threw all those things out, everything would be better and God would heal my husband.
Wow.
I actually thought I was going crazy. I consulted a therapist who happened to be a Christian. He told me that my secular interests and my husband's death were problems were not related. Excuse me. He told me that my secular interests and my husband's health problems were not related, and throwing away my magazines and CDs would not affect any change. Actually, I did throw away some of the magazines, but instead of feeling better toward God, I felt somewhat angry. The therapist then told me not to get rid of anything. I then began to fear that I was making idols of these things because of my inability to part with them. But I did want to do what the doctor told me. He said I was indulging in magical thinking in an attempt to control the uncontrollable.
Wow.
Well said. That is profound. I hope people hear that. That whole idea of if I just get rid of this, if I just make my life better, God will be forced to move in some way. It is magical thinking in an attempt to control the uncontrollable. I love that. Said, in addition to profound grief, I am torturing myself now with guilt in that I will never know if my husband could have been healed because I listened to the doctor and did not get rid of my secular things.
Yep. God is the grand legalist.
Wow.
See, I think that's the thing that makes me so frustrated when you look at we look through a glass darkly. We see, you know, we got veils. We don't see clearly. I don't know why in one situation it does work. You know, I've been down the inner healing detective ministry stuff, and you're looking at all this like, what this is. And you know what? I do believe in spiritual realities. I do believe that sometimes things can be attached, unhealthy things. But you know what? This is profoundly subjective. It's got scant little verses in the Bible from which I can draw much of anything.
Yeah.
And so when you approach all this, you know what? I think one of the biggest things that has been the biggest help is to realize that, you know what? Death is part of this experience that we call life. It is part and parcel there.
And there is a grief that goes with that.
Yeah.
But do not add to your grief guilt. If you add to your grief guilt.
What a tortured life.
Or if you add to your children, trying to enjoy your children every day who have these diseases, God's not healed yet, still might, hasn't yet, don't know.
Or might never.
Right. If you add to that, if I could just get everything right today.
The magical attempt to control.
That is what is just, then you add to your grief guilt, or you add to your grief a false responsibility. Here's how I think this sorts out in the journey. If something needs to happen that unlocks the key to healing for these kids, then that's God's to show, not ours to go seek. Because the burden of having to go find this little needle in a haystack that will, that's the whole, this prosperity teaching, this lies about faith being the way we manipulate God, all that is garbage. That's one big sacred cow I'd like to take with a bulldozer and just plow it over. Because this compounds people's ability to live daily in the life and love of Father, because they're too busy trying to figure out, what do I have to do to change this? And yeah. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, and as if my love for these kids exceeds God's love for them. I mean, I think the problem I have with so much of that kind of thinking is it so mischaracterizes God's heart towards us. And it presupposes that I care, but God might not. And somehow in my limited perspective, in my limited capacity to understand and even see what's going on and diagnose it, it's as if, you know, God's up there in a disinterested posture going like, well, when you finally figure it out, then I'll do something. It's like,
or not even disinterested. He might, you know, bending over eternity, bending over his cloud going, come on, man, get it right. If you just get it right, I'll be able to do this that I really want to do. That is such a distorted view of who God is.
Yeah, as if he's limited.
He's not like that.
You know, it's like I know people toss out the whole idea that, you know, God can do nothing but an answer to prayer. But and it rolls off so nice. But guess what? I don't see that verse in the Bible authoritatively.
Nope.
You know what? It seemed to me that nobody was praying at creation. Seemed to me he did quite a bit without any of our help. And so it's like, you know what? Does that mean prayers are rough? No. Prayer matters. Dialogue with God's important. But guess what? I've given up the thought that I have all of this and my desired outcomes within my grasp of control. That if I'll just do, I can. You know what? I'm not God. I cannot author and finish much of anything. But the author and finisher of my faith is with me and will walk through all of this day in and day out.
And that's what the journey really is. The journey is not, I am pushing for outcomes, feeling responsible for certain outcomes. I've somehow got to get the right factors in place. It really is, Jesus, I'm waking up today. And in my grief and sorrow, hold me close to your heart and walk me through this. In the uncertainty or even certainty of circumstances not sorting out the way I'd want them to, I'd rather go through that with him than without him. Is it tough? Yeah. Have you got all my compassion in the world to deal with the loss of a husband you love deeply, the risk of children? I've got a best friend who's wrestling with melanoma right now, and it's recurrent, and it's scary without God's intervention, but it's not scary if God's there, if he makes himself known in the middle of it. I think what you heard coming out of your Novocaine deal, what I read recently in the Jesus coming across the water, the storm, the disciples are being swamped in this boat, and Jesus decides to walk on out to them. He's cute. And they see this figure coming to them at the
waves. Intending to pass them by, I might add.
Well, that's another point. I want to get to this point.
Okay, sir.
When they start freaking out, I mean, the storm's got them feared, first of all, and then they've got this apparition thing coming out of them. They have no idea what that's about.
Yeah, their first thought is, it was Jesus.
His answer to them was, it is I. And to me, I tell you, no matter what I go through, no matter the uncertainty of things, when somewhere in the midst of that, I see something, see someone who says, Wayne, it's me. Not the disease is me. Not the grief is me. Not the, I'm here in the midst of all of this with you. You and I can walk out together what the next year's going to be. I'll give you the grace to enjoy each day what you can enjoy with your children. I'll give you the grace to endure suffering as that progresses, or joy as they're healed, or whatever. That it's still grace that we need. It's as much grace. And I said this after the whole 9/11 incident, because one of the planes that went into the towers is a plane I've flown on before. It's a flight out of Boston on a Monday morning or Tuesday. I've often flown that flight. When I heard the flight number, it was kind of a chill. And people say, oh, it's the grace of God you weren't on that flight. And I absolutely, it's the grace of God I wasn't.
What of the believers that were?
Yes, it was the grace of God there too. And the grace of God for their wives and children who now live with, it's all grace. Grace doesn't fix everything to make it the way we want it. Grace holds us through the worst things life can hurl at us.
Yeah.
And promises us something so much better in a day to come. That's the life of it. And yeah, it's hard to walk out, but.
But we have such a death denying culture. I mean, it's like, you know, when we go buy meat at the grocery store, most of us didn't grow up on the farm. I didn't have to slay Bessie. You know, it's like we don't have any concept.
We killed the raisins.
That it's you know what? It is part of this thing called life. The most unhealthy and the most still stuck family situations that have surrounded death have been the ones that have sort of denied its reality, sought to avoid it like the elephant under the carpet. You're just going like, you know what? We don't have the answers. I can't give the answers. I don't know why unless God speaks. I'm not even convinced that there always is a definitive why. And that blows some people out of the water. You're just going like, look, I don't know. I won't know until God provides explanation for everything. And yet the Bible I read, he doesn't seem to. Job, were you there? Did you make a fish? That wasn't this question, Jesus, you know? And so when you look at all this, to me, it's healthy when I can take the whole predicament of, gosh, both of these experiences. One of, I lost my husband. Two, I got two kids that I'm going to lose, I've limited time with, to be able to take both of those realities to God and say, Lord, help me sort this out. Help me see this through the lens that you see. Because here's what I see and here's how I hurt.
Right.
To know that I can actually pour my heart out, even if it has venom and anger in it, to someone who can absorb it and walk me through that. What a tragedy to not be able to be honest with God.
And you don't have to do that every day.
No, no.
There are days you can just wake up and enjoy your children. I think, well, if I don't have this crying out time with God, I might miss something that will be part of them getting healed or not healed. That's the freedom I want these kind of people to have. Don't live that way.
And I don't have to live in depression. I don't have to live in sorrow.
As much as you
can,
enjoy these children every day. I do think there's a reality. This is so raw in my thinking. I'm not even sure I've processed it. I think there's some reality behind death and suffering in our world that we don't get yet, that God gets. Uh-huh. I'll give you an example. Most days I like gravity. I like the fact that I'm held to this planet and don't go flying off of it and bang my head
on the
roof. Gravity's a good thing. There are days I really hate gravity. Like when I set something on the side of a counter, not quite far enough,
and falls
over. I was vacuuming for Sarah. Vacuuming is all our job here. We're learning that. But I was vacuuming for
downstairs. I'm thinking you were vacuuming for Sarah.
I'm trying to get the language.
Now you're vacuuming for Wayne.
Working on the language. I was vacuuming, and I was moving a table to get underneath it, and it tipped off this little basket vase of plastic flowers. I'm thinking, no big deal. But it was filled with glass marbles. And when it hit our tile floor, glass marbles went
everywhere.
Six rooms away. I'm just sitting there going, I hate gravity. I hate gravity. You know, I hate the pain that death causes people. I hate the pain that life and struggling with some of the things that life did. There's something going on. Gravity for most days is a great blessing. We'd hate to live without it. Some days when you're not quite balanced on that ladder, 15 feet in the air, you may hate gravity on that day. I think this false notion we have of life is that God should always fix that. God should never let somebody fall off a ladder. God should never let somebody get a disease. God should. That's a deal. But I think there's something God knows that we don't know yet about what all undergirds our life in this age and the fact that suffering happens, that there's realities going on we don't see, and mm-hmm. which impacts my brother not being healed, impacts someone else being healed. It's not God sitting up there saying, ooh, I like you, I'll heal you. Ooh, I don't like you. That's not at stake. That's not at issue. But there's a reality, and I've been really playing with this lately because I've thought about it in terms of all the moments, and I've had a few lately, where gravity has not been my friend. And yet, most days it is. And you can't have one without the other. You can't turn it on and turn it off at will. And I do think there's something about the ways in which God works that I want to know what that is. I want to learn. I want to be more in tune with that. Jesus, obviously, because I come away reading this, also in my reading of the Gospels, people like this got healed an awful lot more than we see in our day. And I wouldn't put this on the mother of these children in a million years, but I came away from this letter saying, Jesus, I want to more and more participate in what of the supernatural divine you want me to participate in and how you make the gospel clear in the world. And there are times when I see wonderful things happen as I pray for people. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that in the past, but not anything like what I read in Gospels and Acts. And I have a hunger to see that too be part of this journey as we grow in him.
Yeah, you know, I had a really strange experience a number of years back where a young college kid, his dad was dying. And he was in agony because God had just made himself powerfully real to him. And he wasn't sure where his dad was at. And his dad's disease was progressively debilitating even communication. And so the guy left school, hung out at home just to be by his father's bedside.
Good for him.
But I mean, he would just agonize day in, day praying for his dad, just sleeping and sitting next to his dad. And, you know, I got to know him and then the family. And, you know, they called me over one afternoon because it was like, you know what? This was the time for the dad to die. But the dilemma was, is he had a pacemaker. And every time he started to die, the pacemaker would kick in, and all of a sudden he'd have some very painful, gasping, back-to-life moments. And the mom's a nurse, and she's sitting there with a magnet in her hand, And she's going like, you know what? It is his time. And there's nothing we can do. There's nothing. I mean, there's hospice care. He's the only thing that is prolonging this and the agony of it is his pacemaker. And she's going like, the only thing I know is put a magnet over this pacemaker and make it stop. And you're just going like, oh, the horror.
Oh, and you got the euthanasia crowd screaming.
You got the horror of that and going like the guilt of that and the kids being, you know, a couple of the kids are like, okay, fine. And the other kids not fine. And you look at all of this and, you know, I sat there going like, God, where are you in the midst of all this? And in the midst of all that, God showed up in the midst of a family that didn't really know him well. And I just said, God, we need your peace to settle in on this moment. I don't know what to do. There's no book that I read that says, here's exactly what you do in this situation. And you know what? Inexplicably, the presence of God came to the point that people that didn't really know him acknowledged, I think God's here. There was a peaceful sense of the father's passing without the mother having to put a magnet on the father's heart. And there was a sense of, you know what? God's here. And so I don't have to agonize over the eternal destiny of that. You know what? We don't know. I can't sit there and say, here's my word of knowledge and God has assured him of it. I don't know. All I know is God's here. And in what is an impossible moment, he's making himself known. I think we can trust him. It's neat to realize that was a healthy way to embrace part of the reality of life. Can't avoid it. I'm not able to just control it, but I can trust God with it.
And we'd be better off if we would walk each other through that without all the plastic answers and pushing each other toward things, but just say, gosh, let's get in this together and listen to God and let God fulfill his purpose.
Thanks for traveling with us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd appreciate your comments or your questions by email or at our website, thegodjourney.com. Stop by today and join the conversation.